You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. This is a new podcast for Radio Aryan. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Today's date is the 14th of November, 2016. And I'm very pleased to welcome my new co-host for this new series, Subal, who you may have known under that name on YouTube, but he's now going under the name of The Aryan. He's made lots of very popular videos. He's obviously another Briton like me. And this new series of podcasts, we're going to talk about mainly European issues, or at least a European viewpoint of what's going on in the world. If anything particular is happening in Britain, then we'll go into a little bit more detail on that than the other podcasts that we have here at Radio Aryan. But of course, the main news at the moment is just this wonderful win that we've had with Donald Trump. I know we've discussed that a lot last week, but this is just it. This is the main news. So there is still lots more to talk about with him, and we've also got some stuff that we want to discuss about activism in Britain that was brought up at the Southwest Forum recently, which I hope our listeners have checked out. You can find that at the Radio Aryan site, and both me and Subal were there. Okay, Subal, how are you doing today?
Hail victory!
Hail victory indeed!
Hail victory!
Victory at last!
I had to say that, sorry, can't resist it. I'm a big fan of the Daily Stormer, so
yeah,
I thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, well, I think, the Daily Stormer has been a big help in this campaign. I mean, Andrew Anglin has been right behind Donald Trump right from the beginning. And back when we were doing Radio Stormer, which is over a year ago, I mean, we were talking about the things that Trump was saying then. And Andrew came out and said he officially endorses Donald Trump. And this was way back then. And we were saying, look, he's going to win, and we're going to do all we can to support him. At the time, I think we were saying, well, he's the best one out of all of them. And then he started talking about the wall. And then it was Muslims and Mexicans. And he just got better and better and better. Dog whistling to white nationalists with some of his tweets. It's been a fantastic campaign, and it really couldn't have turned out any better for us, I think. When did you start getting interested in Trump then? Was it through the Daily Stormer?
Yeah, I basically discovered both of them at pretty much the same time. So it was the Daily Stormer and the whole Trump campaign, they're kind of like one and the same thing for me. I'm a big fan of Andrew Anglin. I do believe that he is leading the way, because he is he's a radical, and he pushes the limits, and he's a big fan of the window, the Overton window, and the further you go to the right, and the more you talk about things which are really radical and really extreme, hard right, the better it is, because it makes everybody else look moderate, and the more it shakes up society. So I'm a real believer in what he's doing, and yeah, big fan.
There's a lot of thought that goes into it. There's a lot of thought that he puts into what he's actually doing. When he first started out and was being a bit extreme, people were saying, oh no, you don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be doing that. You're going to be upsetting people. I must admit myself, I had a few doubts when Garen Helm was imprisoned, and all these tweets were to the filthy Jew bitch. And I thought, shouldn't we really be, coming out with Jews that are in the government, or lies about the Holocaust, rather than just, saying filthy Jew bitch and calling her all these names. But if we'd have done that, it wouldn't have got the media exposure that it did. It got this massive media exposure, and it showed her as just whining about being called names. And it made me think, well, that's all it is, isn't it? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And we'd always been taught, I know you must have been taught the same as me, Subal, you don't react to words and names. People call you mean names, so what? Hasn't physically hurt you, and yet somehow we've gone from that to making mean words the worst possible crime that anyone could ever commit, and actually putting people in prison for that. So he's gone on from there with all these mastery over Twitter. He's not even on Twitter now, but he's organized.
Yeah, they kicked him off, didn't they? He's totally banned.
I'll tell you what, at that time when he got banned, that was my favorite Twitter operation of all, when he was pretending to be a black protester at Missouri University, saying that the Ku Klux Klan were on site with guns and all this. And
I thought it was Sam Hyde. I thought they were sending Sam Hyde in, wasn't it?
That as well.
Yeah, it was mental. Yeah, very, very funny.
And, excellent.
He's really pushed the boundaries. And Twitter is basically, that is the battlefield, because every politician in the West and every journalist, and I don't know about the intellectuals, but every politician, every journalist, they're basically on Twitter. I mean, even if you watch the BBC, they quote Twitter. So it's a place where ordinary people can actually, you know, reach these usually untouchable people. And so the whole Twitter troll campaign has been extremely successful. And it's a really good thing. And I think it's just interesting that I think basically for the last 70 years, probably since the end of the Second World War, the right wing has been failing, because it has always been apologizing and trying to be polite and not wanting to offend anybody. But the problem is, when you do that, you simply look weak. And the way I see it in terms of logic, if you're having an argument with somebody, the person who usually wins the argument is the person who places the burden of proof on the other person, you see. So, for example, if somebody says to me, they say, oh, you're just a racist, right? And then if I say in reply, oh, I'm not a racist, I'm not really, I've got black friends and blah, 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 then I have the burden of proving to that person that I'm not a racist, that I'm not a sexist, that I'm not an Islamophobe, that I'm not a homophobe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they will never accept your proof. They will never accept your apology. And so you lose the argument. And this is what has been happening for 70 years. And then Andrew Anglin comes along and he's like, yeah, I'm a neo-Nazi white supremacist. And that's it. It's like, what can you say? You can't say anything anymore. You know, he's basically saying, yes, I am evil. I am the devil, and what are you going to do about it, you know? So, yeah, it's genius. Love it.
Hey, you know, they've even had to get sort out a special task force specifically to take him and Weave down.
They've
got ex-director of the FBI and all these Jewish journalists. And what's it for? It's just for people criticising these journalists who think that they somehow should have this right to never be criticised.
Yeah. And this above is the first criticism, the untouchables.
Yeah, that's what they think that they've been. And what we've really managed to show is that we've been able to take control of that and the Twitter and the internet and turn it around to serving us. You know, do you remember when they started out with the Arab Spring Revolution in Tahrir Square? They kept saying, well, this is a Twitter revolution. It's all been caused by Twitter. And it was looking at that. I was discussing this with him when we were making Radio Stormer together. He was saying, you know, well, how about if they can do that, if they can manipulate the masses through Twitter, then we can do the same. You know, and we can do it better because we know more about, you know, these sort of things than they do. And that's what's happened. And this year, I think, with the advances in the technology that's been available to us, we've been able to inject our humour into all these memes with the meme magic. I think that has really helped this campaign, with some of these fantastic pictures that people were creating of Donald Trump as superheroes, as a crusader, being blessed by the Pope, you know, charging on a horse, fighting against hordes of savages, all these amazing memes. And on the other side of that, besides showing Donald Trump to be, you know, the God Emperor, There was the taking over of Pepe the Frog, this harmless frog, and getting them to get mad about that and see that as, you know, this sign of evil white supremacism. And all it is just a harmless frog character. It's really, I think we've really hit them where it hurts. And we're used to being on the losing side. We're not used to being on the winning side. So this is the first time that we've been on the winning side. And Donald Trump has been very magnanimous about it. He's been a good winner. He hasn't sort of rubbed salt into the wound. But that doesn't mean to say that we should be like that. You know, I totally support what Anglin is saying over at the Daily Stormer, and, you know, have no mercy. You know, really stick it into them, you know, shout at them, shout things at them, wind down your window, shout at them, say things to them. I mean, you've got kids. Recently, there was a news story with these kids in middle school, and they were shouting, build the wall, build the wall. And that's the presidential slogan. How can they complain if children are chanting the presidential slogan? I think that really sums it up.
Yeah, the whole thing's changed. And yeah, he's totally right. We've got to attack. And I'm actually a big believer in Alex Linder. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, Alex Linder or Linder. I'm not sure. Anyway, he's the guy that runs the Vanguard News Network in America. You know the guy?
Yeah, I think he's very anti-Christian, so I don't really.
Oh, is he? I didn't realize that. Well, anyway, I went on his website, and he was talking about tactics. And one of the things he said is, "You've got to attack the right." And this is something which really resonates with me, because it's basically you have these kind of wimpy, pathetic people who are pretending to be the right wing. But they're not the right wing, because they're not talking about the obvious elephant in the room, which is the Jewish problem. And we need to attack these people, and we need to expose them for what they are, which is basically they're either controlled opposition, like Alex Jones, who is obvious controlled opposition. He was the controlled opposition in the Truth Movement, and now he's jumped into the whole alt-right bandwagon. And Gavin McInnes. And I would even go forward and attack Stephen Molyneux and Black Pigeon Speaks and even Uncle Ted. All these people, I mean, they're not talking about Israel. They refuse to talk about it. And we've seen already, actually, because Anglin himself is attacking Gavin McInnes right now. Well, Gavin McInnes started attacking him. So they're having a little squabble right now. But even that, they have this little squabble. It actually drives more attention back to the real alt-right, the real hard right, who actually do talk about the Jewish problem. So, I believe that we need to continue to attack, and we need to continue to attack the controlled opposition, because the whole narrative's moved to the right now. They're going to get rid of the old Fox News pundits and the old conservative pundits. And basically, you're going to have Stephen Molyneux, Gavin McInnes, the Jew, Milo, and Alex Jones, and all these kind of soft, alt-light kind of people. They're the new moderates. They're the new right wing. And the Jews are going to put them there as the controlled opposition to stop people from talking about the Jewish problem. And we need to attack them. That's my belief.
Well, I think, as you say, you know, he's got a recent article up there where he points some of this out. I think Milo deservedly needs to be attacked. I think Richard Spencer, you know, he's been given a chance. I mean, no enemies to the right, as you say. You know, anything to the right pushes the Overton window, but that's now been pushed quite far in our direction. And there's pictures of Richard Spencer with. That Jew that's caused a lot of problems and
what's he doing with that?
With him. You can give these people a bit of leeway, but then they, you know, if they do something that's unacceptable, such as Milo, who's homosexual in the first place and Jewish, or deliberately sucks up to these Jews, then they should be named. I mean, I wouldn't say that, Richard Spencer was a shill or anything like that, but I don't think he's taking money to deliberately do what he's doing. I think he's misguided in getting too friendly with these Jews. I mean, we've got someone who is friendly with the Jews, Donald Trump. and we've got him into office. Yeah. And but we've used that to expose the Jews. You know, we don't need someone like Richard Spencer to be doing the same, and you know, and not exposing them. We need him to be speaking out and pushing things further to the right, along with the rest of us. You know, yeah. It's a, you know, we don't like to knock people on here. You know, we try not to mention too many.
All right, sorry. Well, you don't have to knock them. I'll knock them for you. Yeah. You can be the good cop, and I'll be the bad cop.
Okay.
No, okay. But seriously, it's I don't believe in this idea of no enemies on the right. I've got to say, I don't believe it. I understand why the left wing does it, but in my opinion, the left wing is fundamentally feminine. And women, as you well know, they like to engage in groupthink. They like to get together and, you know, reach a consensus and all agree with each other and give each other a nice hug and this kind of thing. This is not what men do. Men like to disagree with each other. Men like to confront each other. And they like to challenge each other. And even with their friends, they'll challenge each other and, you know, spur each other on. And I was reading, it's been quite influential on me. I've been reading Homer's Iliad, which I would recommend to any white nationalist who's interested in their culture. I'm not that well read, but I read it anyway. And one of the things I noticed was that you look at the warriors, the Greek warriors and the Trojan warriors, when they're talking to each other, they're constantly insulting each other. They're like, "Oh, you coward, get back up and charge into battle. What's the matter with you?" You know, and then the other warrior's like, "Yeah," and then they get up and they charge into the battle. So this is how men deal with each other. It's like, stop being a pussy and, you know, fight the fight. So I don't personally see any problem in calling out Richard Spencer for being a complete pussy for not talking about the Jews. Because why isn't he talking about this problem? You know, he should just be able to, you know, man up and take the insult as a man. The same goes for Stefan Molyneux, who's probably a Jew anyway. The same goes for Black Pigeon Speaks. The same goes for Peter Hitchens here in England. Any of these people, they are not used to being attacked from the right. They're used to being attacked from the left wing. And I think it was Jonathan Bowden, in several of his videos, he keeps saying that, you know, the center never holds. So I don't know how they'll be able to, you know, maintain their position if they're getting attacked on both sides. So, yeah, for all the above reasons, I think personally, I want to make a whole bunch of videos just attacking these people and just calling them out for being the cowards that they are, for not addressing the real problem. Because you can't talk about global politics and about, you know, the culture war. You can't talk about it without talking about the Jewish question. You're missing the point completely. You can't explain, nothing makes sense without talking about the Jewish question. Why would the government of this country want to destroy this country? Why would the white people of this country want to absolutely annihilate themselves? It just doesn't make sense. And ordinary people, they can't understand it, right? Because it doesn't make sense. So they naturally trust their government. They think, oh, well, you know, they're a bit corrupt and they grab money, but that's what politicians do. But they have our best interests at heart. You can't understand the real gravity and the real evil of the situation without talking about the Jewish question. You just can't put the pieces of the puzzle together. So personally, I'm going to attack these people. I'm going to make some more videos calling them all a bunch of cowards. That's my plan.
Well, I know what you're saying there about our cozy circle phenomena, this feminine phenomena where you have the group and they'll try and make people that are outside of the group, they will know that they're outside of the group. And then the yeah. ones that do the favors for the women, they'll be inside the group and they'll be rewarded. You know, there's stuff that's been written on this. And I think we do see that with a certain section of the alt-right. You know, they do try to exclude Andrew Anglin, and you'll get these dark editorials written about him, which basically just show that they don't actually have any idea whatsoever of what he's doing. They have no understanding of the concept of what he's doing, the media manipulation or propaganda, you know, how propaganda needs to appeal to everyone. It needs to appeal to the lowest portion of the public so that the maximum number of people understand it. And that's the point of it. You can have your highfalutin intellectual blogs, but only a few people will read them. And then you can have, you know, a few paragraphs that will make somebody laugh, poking fun at the kikes, and you'll get hundreds of thousands of people, you know, passing that around, that find that, you know, particularly funny. Now, I mentioned Richard Spencer because there's been that picture of him with the Jew. I'm not particularly enamored with Stefan Molyneux, but I know that Andrew Anglin does use his stuff and has been trying to push him further to the right. And Black Pigeon, again, he may not have named the Jew, but I haven't seen him shilling for them. I haven't seen him saying that, Jews are good I just haven't heard him mention them. Really, it's not like Alex Jones, where he's trying to place the blame onto Arabs or anything like that. And again, Black Pigeon has got hundreds of thousands of people view his videos, and they obviously see the comments, read the comments, and then they get brought further into the alt-right. So I wouldn't like to include both of those. I like listening to Black Pigeon's stuff myself.
Oh, I do. I don't really like Stefan Molyneux. I love Black Pigeon Speaks videos, but I just how can I explain this? As far as I'm concerned, it's like if you're on the Trump train, like if you voted for Trump and you supported him, as far as I'm concerned, you're a hero. You're a great guy. You're my brother, you know. But it's sometimes you can give your brother a friendly little slap, like, come on, mate, be a bit harder, be a bit tougher. That's the only thing I'm talking about. I'm not really talking about like vindictively, Black Pigeon Speaks as a moron. Not nothing like that. I just like give him a little, you know, dig. Like, come on, mate, talk about Israel. That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, which fits in with, you know, what you were saying about Homer's Iliad, the way that they were speaking to one another.
Yeah.
That fits in. So we're not against Black Pigeon or Stefan Molyneux. We just wish that they would toughen up a bit.
Toughen up. Yeah, come on, mate. Get it together. Toughen up. Yeah.
Name the Jew.
Name the Jew. Yeah.
Okay, well... do you want to move on to discussing some of the thoughts that you had about this Southwest Forum?
Yeah. Well, now Trump's won. Basically, we've got 17 million votes just hanging out there in space, waiting to be picked up by a nationalistic party in the next general election. And also, I'd like to say that... Firstly, they're going to try and not let the Brexit thing happen. They're going to try and derail it. They've already tried to derail it, and that's been covered quite clearly. Jez sent a letter around. Well, I haven't really seen it on the internet anywhere, but I know Jez Turner sent a letter around talking about it. But the Jews are behind that. So they're going to try and derail it. But even if we do get the Brexit, you don't know if it's going to be a soft Brexit, a half Brexit. Even if we get a hard Brexit, whatever that means, they can still leave the borders open, we can be completely separated from Europe and still have 200,000 Muslims pouring in every year. So the thing that we really need in this country is a nationalistic party in government, and to just sweep away the Tories and sweep away the Labour Party. And our problems are not going to be solved until that happens. And what I believe will happen, what I believe their plan is, I wanted to make a video about this, and I made the same video like five times, and I kept messing up. I didn't upload it in the end. But anyway, why I think Boris Johnson failed to become prime minister, I think they knocked him out of the way, right, with this Michael Gove supposedly stabbed him in the back, right, which is just nonsense, because so many other people would have supported him with or without Michael Gove's support. So it was just utter nonsense. But they played this little drama to knock him out of the way, because he is obviously controlled opposition. And then what they're going to do, now that they've got Theresa May, she's the prime minister, and then in 2 or 3 years' time, when it's the next election, they'll have a leadership challenge, right? Boris Johnson will come back, and he will be like the returning hero, you know, and he'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, if I'd have been prime minister, then we would have had Brexit already. Or if I'd have been prime minister, then we would have stopped immigration already, and blah, 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 blah. And then Joe Public will think, yeah, Boris is the hero, and they'll vote for the Tory party again. That's my That's my belief of what the Tory party is trying to do with that. And, yeah, the only way we're going to stop people from voting Tory again in the next general election is to have a proper nationalistic party there. And, it's probably going to have to be UKIP unless something else steps up. I mean, I can only hope that Nigel Farage will take leadership again. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think Paul Nuttall has put in for leadership, and I think he's going to win that. And from what I've seen of Paul Nuttall, he's pretty good. So I think you are going to see UKIP bouncing back under the leadership of Paul Nuttall. With the Tory party, I think they are already leaning towards the right. Theresa May has already been saying things which to me sound like sound policies, grammar schools. When she talks about Brexit, she said, you know, we've got to secure our borders. So we've got to get immigration down to 10,000, not over 100,000, which is what people are calling a hard Brexit. And I believe she said that if it comes down to free trade and you have to accept the free movement of peoples, then we'll stop the free trade. We've got to stop this free movement of peoples. So I could see her moving further to the right already. And now that Donald Trump is in power, I think that is going to encourage her to move to the right all the more because of that. We've also got a really good a Trump card there in Nigel Farage, who was obviously the first person to go and see Donald Trump, and actually got spent 2 hours with him. That fantastic picture, I think it's the best picture of the year of the pair of them in front of this big gold wall with Nigel Farage with that big look of glee on his face with his mouth wide open.
From ear to ear, isn't he? Yeah,
fantastic picture. So I think we are really well placed. Donald Trump is an Anglophile, so he is going to be inclined to be good to Britain. But the thing is, he is annoyed and upset at the things that were said about him by some members of the Conservative Party. David Cameron was incredibly rude. David Cameron is no longer there. It's Theresa May that's there. Boris Johnson said a few things that weren't too clever. But interestingly, he has come out and said, we need to stop this big whinge fest. And he's told the other members of the EU that he's not having anything to do with their little get together on what we should do to combat Trump, as it were. They've just released that news today that there are members, representatives from the EU that are all meeting together to see what they should do about it. And he, or I think all the foreign secretaries, basically. And he said, I'm having nothing to do with it, which is very wise. I don't know if he'd actually get in there as Prime Minister, but I think things are certainly looking up for pushing politics in Britain further towards the right. And of course, Donald Trump is going to condemn any of these countries which continue to allow this mass immigration of these savage hordes from the Middle East and Africa. He's already said that our civilization is at threat from this. He's already said who it is that's behind it, why they're doing it. And interesting enough as well, just today, they've said that obviously Marine Le Pen was the first politician to phone up and congratulate him. But Marine Le Pen is now working with Trump's campaign coordinator for the Front National campaign in France, which for the French presidency. And I do think Marine Le Pen stands a good chance of winning it. You know, I'd really like to see her win it. You know, I think there's really good chances that we could see Norbert Hofer win in the Austrian election at the beginning of December and see Marine Le Pen win the presidency of France. And if we get that, Britain's got no choice but to move further towards the right. I mean, all these politicians are going to see that the way to win is to move towards the right. And we're going to see these communist socialist parties like Labour Party are just going to be destroyed, and the Liberal Democrats. And as I say, the Conservatives have already, it looks like they've worked out that they should be moving further towards the right. So this is just going to increase that, I think.
We're all living in the shadow of Donald Trump now. And it's a very exciting time. And the funny thing about the whole situation is that nobody really knows what is going on in his head because he plays his cards so close. I mean, I'm sure all the white nationalists that listen to this radio show have heard the rumors that, you know, he used to read Mein Kampf. I think it was his ex-wife, wasn't it? He used to say that he used to read Mein Kampf and keep it on his bedside table. And we're all kind of like hoping and praying that he just he comes into the office and just turns out to be a complete fascist dictator. But nobody knows. Nobody knows. And God, I don't know. Actually, I mean, the thing is, we could be so close to victory. We could literally win within 6 months, you know, the way I see it. Because obviously the war that we're fighting is a cultural war, really. It's a psychological war. And the foundation of that psychological war for the Jews is obviously the Holocaust. And to reel that to be a lie, I reckon Trump could do it in 6 months if he wants to. I reckon he could come into – can you hear me, by the way?
Yeah, I reckon
he could come into office. First of all, if I was Trump, right, this is what I'd do. If I was Trump, come into office. First of all, make sure you got the army, because I don't know how many Israelis they've got in like leadership positions in the U.S. Army. But you have to clear them out. I did hear somewhere in some news article that they kicked out a lot of the good generals. I assume they're the ones that supported Trump. But anyway, make sure you got control of the army. First, if I was Donald Trump, I'd keep my mouth shut for the first couple of months till I had the army on my side and probably the CIA as well. But make sure you got the army on your side, and then just start to complain about Israel, maybe threaten to cut off their funding or whatever. And then, you know, get the conversation into public. Obviously, the Jews will spaz out, you know, but you just point out the hypocrisy, because Trump wants to build a wall. And you just say, well, Israel's got a rule. I mean, you could even do it just by glorifying them, you know, saying, I want to make America like Israel. You know, this kind of funny psychology, you know.
I think
Israel's got a wall. Israel's got really strict immigration policies. Let's make America like Israel. You know, get that conversation into the public sphere. Build it up. And talk about communism. Talk about how the Jews ran all the gulags in the Soviet Union. And then just hit them with the, you know, the big whammy that the Holocaust is a lie. I reckon you could bring the national consciousness to that level in months. It wouldn't even take that long. As long as you got the army behind you, you couldn't just drop it on the first day because people would spaz out. You'd have to like build up to it a little bit. But that could be how close we are. So you just never know. We just don't know. Nobody knows, you know, so.
Well, I think he's doing the right thing by holding his cards close to his chest. People are saying, well, he hasn't said that he's going to do this, or he hasn't said that he's going to do that. And I think, well, he's not in office yet. You've got to wait until he gets into office. Today he's confirmed, yes, there will be a wall. He's said that 2 to 3 million criminal immigrants will either be deported or they will be incarcerated. And once the borders are secured, they will look at what they're going to do with all the rest, all the other illegal immigrants. And that's what he's said today, which I think is pretty wise not to be too extreme until he actually gets in office with the army. I know he's had 88 generals that have come out in support of him. He's got the border support force that have the border security force that have come out in support of him. It's been interesting the way that the media is now responding. I mean, right the way through the campaign, they were saying, oh, he's too extreme. He's a fascist. He's a Nazi. He's going to do this, that, and the other. And now that they've realized that it's because of that that everybody voted for him, now they're trying to say, oh, he's compromising. Oh, he's not going to scrap Obamacare. I mean, all he said was he was going to replace Obamacare. And then when he was questioned on it, he said, well, there are these 2 points that I think might be worth keeping, but only 2 points, and it'd be ridiculous to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, if he shouldn't just throw things out just because they were put in place by the people before him, he should go through what the people before him did, work out what's good in it, and work out what's bad in it. So what the media are trying to do now is to say, oh, he's going back on all his policies, which he isn't, and you have to actually look at what he's said to see that he isn't. As far as this Jewish lobby, the Israel lobby, I mean, part of his policies, one of his policies is that there will be no foreign lobbies in the United States. And that means the Israel lobby. I know people Most probably people think he means the Arabs, Saudi Arabia, and the money they put in for favours. But surely it's got to mean Israel as well. I mean, that they are the biggest foreign lobby group in the United States, AIPAC and the Jewish lobby. So if he gets rid of that, then that means that you won't have such a huge Jewish influence on things. I'd like to see him make some changes in the media, but I'm not sure quite how he's going to do that. This is another interesting thing, because the media has lied so much about him and is lying now about him compromising. It's only going to be the nationalist media that is actually telling the truth. So people are going to be going to the Daily Stormer to find the truth, because they know it's all going to be lies everywhere else, lies about the president of America. You know, so either they keep lying and everybody moves to nationalist sites to get their news, or they will be forced to actually report the truth for a change. It just couldn't get any better, could it, really?
No, it couldn't get any better. And even though they are kind of lying about him now, you can still taste this thing in the atmosphere where the kind of mood has changed a little bit. You know, the whole like consciousness of the planet has like shifted in a very subtle way. And even though they're obviously trying to stab me in the back, they can't be like brutally insulting like they were before, you know, saying that they have to respect him. He's the president now. They can't just like, you know, shamefully attack the president. They have to kind of be a little bit more respectful. And this is all over the world. There's a definite shift in consciousness. So it's really beautiful to see. But yeah, people know that the mass media is basically lying, and that's why they're going to turn to the new controlled opposition, which is, you know, Black Pigeon Speaks, Stephen Molyneux, and the alt light, which is like why I said, I think that's why we got to attack those people.
At least push them further in the direction that we want them to go in. I mean, some of these journalists, they haven't quite got the memo that they need to be changing in their narrative. We had one journalist from The Guardian that called for his assassination. And she's apparently now disappeared. Her tweet has disappeared. It was covered in the Sun newspaper that there was a journalist that called for his assassination. But all that sort of thing that they were doing before he got elected, I mean, they kept making jokes about, won't somebody go and kill Donald Trump? I mean, they go on about them, the journalists, getting death threats from us on Twitter, which we don't do. You know, don't advise anyone to send death threats, call them names, but don't threaten them like that. But they are the ones that actually make these death threats, and yet they think they have some kind of moral right to be doing it because he's a quote-unquote racist, as if, caring for your own people is some kind of terrible sin if you're a white person. It's implicitly white. What he's doing is implicitly nationalistic and towards white people, but explicitly it's really about making America great again. And when he says that, he's including all black as well as white Americans from what he says. But it is America and the original Western American civilization that he's wanting to save, and that was all built by white people. So that's implicit in it. It's the way that I see it. It's implicit that it's white.
Yeah, going to see a huge change in narrative. I think he's doing the right thing by being kind of like calm and collected. You know, when he came out and he did his, you know, when he just won and he came out and he did that speech and he said thank you to Hillary Clinton and said she was a great leader and she served her country. It was kind of like, it was kind of amusing to hear, but I think it was the right thing to say because he needs to. I mean, he's not in the office yet. He's got 2 months, right? You don't know what these people are crazy and they're ruthless. You don't know what they're going to do in 2 months. So I think he's doing the right thing, being calm and collected and presidential and, you know, trying to soothe things down. And ultimately, he does need to get people on his side. And this is actually interesting. Like, if you compare Trump to, like, Duterte, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but anyway, the Philippines, our
Duterte.
Friend in the Philippines.
Yeah.
You know, he's ruling over a racially homogeneous society. And so he's just way up there in the, everybody loves him, you know, and he's able to get away with saying all kinds of things and being like, you know, really loud and attacking his enemies, and everybody loves him. Trump doesn't have a homogeneous society in America. He's got this multicultural mishmash. So he kind of has to be a little bit more, a little bit smoother. And I can understand that. I totally respect that. That's fine. I think he's doing the right thing.
He's been a gracious winner. That's what I think came across when he spoke and said that. If you listen to his words, what he said about Clinton, he said she'd put up a good fight. You know, she'd been a worthy opponent to fight against. That's what he said. You know, he didn't say, "Oh,
well, she did." You know, I was almost impressed. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do hate Hillary Clinton, but she's tough. She's a tough old witch, that's for sure.
It was a dirty campaign. It was disgusting, you know, the slanders and the lies she was throwing at him. But, you know, he managed to beat that. When you think about what he did beat, he beat the entire media. He beat the Clintons. He beat all the money that was behind her. He beat all of the political correctness, you know, all the cultural Marxism, all of that he beat.
He had to beat his own party
incredible.
As well.
Yeah, and his own party. And that is an incredible mandate that he has from the people to carry through. The policies.
Somebody sent me a link today on Facebook. I don't know if this is true or not. I haven't had this confirmed, but he sent me a link to some website saying that he won the popular vote as well. I don't know if that's true. I was just throwing that out there. Some random website is telling that Donald Trump also won the popular vote. I don't know if they've counted it all up. But whatever the case, it's a landslide victory. He got 309 electoral. And was it 306, I think? 306, and Hillary got 230, something?
Yeah,
massive
win.
Landslide victory.
These protesters that are out there on the streets, it's not like it was a close win or, you know, the postal vote hasn't been counted yet or anything like that. It's specifically, I don't want him. I don't care that the rest of the country voted for him. I don't care that the majority voted for him. I refuse to accept that. And this goes against everything that democracy supposedly stands for, to be going out there and doing that and ripping the place up. And they're also being funded. They're being paid for doing this. It's $15 to $22 an hour to go out there. The adverts are on Craigslist. The people that are funding this, surely he's going to shut down those organizations when he gets
to
power.
They're going to jail. They're all going to jail.
Clearly.
It's going to be 2017 is going to be the best year ever. It's going to be endless entertainment. I'm really looking forward to it. Really, it's just going to, this my New Year's party is just going to be the best thing. I mean, they're all going to jail. It's hilarious. And I think also it's basically all those protests doesn't really worry me. It's just the dying breath of the left wing, really. We've reached peak progressiveness, and the tide has turned, and it's coming back. And they know it too, and the people know it. Everybody can see it. It's
The hypocrisy is really clear. I mean, there was one headline that caught my eye was this big fat Negress anti-bullying ambassador. 23, hideously obese, and she pushed a 72-year-old white man to the ground, just knocked him to the ground. When the police arrested her, she said, "Oh, he called me nigger. He called me nigger, so that's okay for me to just knock an old man to the ground." And I think anybody reading that is just going to be thinking, these monsters doing stuff like this. This is what the opposition were like. You know, we've had a really close shave there by getting Donald Trump in.
I'm walking on the clouds right now. I can't believe it.
Same here.
I pick up the newspapers every day and I look at them. I'm like, I just can't believe that we won. I'm sorry to be pessimistic. I honestly didn't think that we'd do it. I didn't think, not because I thought he could get voted in. I thought it would be the electoral fraud that would stop him. Because you got people voting twice and, you know, dead people voting and illegals voting, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't think he'd do it, and he did it. And
in spite of that, he won. You think there must have been loads of fraud that went on, but it just wasn't enough.
Wasn't enough, yeah.
There must have been loads of it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why they thought they'd win, because they knew they've got so many false votes going in. That's why they were so confident.
It was hilarious that they were. You know, Newsweek sent out 150,000 copies of Newsweek magazine with America's first female president on the front of it. They've had they've had to destroy all of them. Hillary Clinton on the night itself, she hired out a huge great hall with a big glass ceiling with a big podium underneath it, and she was supposed to come out to accept her crown and speak to her adoring crowd, and Donald Trump was just at home watching it on the television.
Yeah, it was utterly shameful that she didn't come out and speak to her people.
I
was watching Russia Today actually on the election night. I stayed up all night and watched it. And she didn't come out. That guy, Podesta, came out and he's like, "Yeah, she'll talk to you tomorrow." I mean, these people, some of them really worked hard for her, you know? She couldn't even be bothered to come out and talk to them. It's just utterly, utterly elitist. You know, I don't need to talk to the peasants.
Yeah, she was treating them with contempt. I thought that's a really contemptuous thing to do. It's like she was blaming them for not working hard enough. So she's not going to grace them with her presence. And that horrible Podesta creature, he just reminds me of a vulture, like a little baby vulture. Yeah. Hideous looking thing. I'd never seen him properly before until then.
Nah,
yeah, just revolting. They really are.
They're all going to jail.
You know,
they're all going to jail.
The way they look represents the, you know, the wickedness of them. Don't you think that? I mean, you look at Donald Trump and his wife and his family. They're beautiful people. Beautiful people are in charge again. And you look at Obama and Michelle, horrible monster looking things. You look at that Podesta. Look at Clinton. Mm. Now, really hideously ugly.
I've noticed this on the BBC a few times, actually, when they have these Labour candidates speaking and you look at them closely and they've got terrible teeth. Like really like rotten yellow teeth, the kind of teeth that like, you know, a heroin addict would have. And you look at these people and you're like, ugh, you know, it's like
Jeremy Corbyn himself. He's like this hideous goblin. I was watching him on Andrew Marr today. You know, his face is all twisted up. They are really horrible, horrible people. They look horrible and they have horrible ideas and they do horrible things to our people. I think having a warped soul gives them a warped body. You know, you can tell that they're not nice people just from looking at them. I know there are some people that aren't graced with very good looks. So you do get the odd ones that are incredibly ugly but are really nice people. But the general rule is if they look really ugly, they usually are really ugly type on the inside as well. That's been my experience through life. I don't know if you've had a similar one.
No, there is definitely some truth in that, I think.
There are exceptions to the rule.
I would call it karma, personally.
Yeah,
but,
I would.
But ugly people generally. I meet a lot of people in the general public because of my job. And, we do see a few funny-looking people come in the shop. Wait,
so what is it they say? They say if you get to 45 years old, you get the face that you deserve.
Right, yeah, it does. It builds up. It builds up on you. And I notice it a lot, actually, especially with the girls from my year in school. Like, you see them now, and it's like, oh, my God, what happened to you? Like a train wreck. Like a train wreck happens.
I tell you what, the ones that get old and they have a big family and they stick together with their husband, they're the happiest looking women.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they're the most beautiful looking women are the ones that have had large families and stuck with their husband. And the ones that the feminists that have worked, you know, they're all covered in plastic surgery where they're unhappy with their looks and they end up looking even worse. You know, they mutilate their bodies trying to make themselves look young, where they're dissatisfied with themselves. Whereas the ones with all the stretch marks from having four or five kids are really happy. And because they're happy, they look like beautiful people.
Mm. Yeah, the heart shows the heart. You can see it in their eyes as well, the warmth and that. This is really actually, I mean, the whole feminism thing is just something which we really have to smash. It's such a big, deep, difficult issue for white nationalism to tackle. I think this is another reason why a lot of people hate Andrew Anglin, because he's so viciously honest about the female problem, for want of another word.
I think that's some of his best work. I think that is some of his best work is when he writes about women. I think that is so incisive and accurate.
Yeah.
So many times I've read pieces by him on women and thought, well, I've noticed all of that, but I haven't been able to put it right down to the right descriptive term, exactly what function of the mind it is that's causing that. And he manages to really accurately put it down. I just wanted to say that because you do get people that criticize him for that. And that's one thing I would never criticize him for. I think he's got that spot on.
I know where he's getting it from. I mean, actually, I don't know where he's getting it, but I'm assuming he gets it from the Manosphere. Because, I mean, that's where I get it from. That's why I can understand exactly what he's saying. He's just taking the teachings of the Manosphere to the next level. He's just taken the red pill, the whole, the red pill of the seduction community transformed into the Manosphere. And now he's just taken that into the alt-right and allowing it to reach its natural conclusion, which is that women generally vote for immigration, maternal instincts and for sexual instincts, because feminism has, it's affected men and it's turned white men into absolute pathetic wimps. And women, they look at these dark skinned apes and they look at Islam in particular and they think, oh, finally somebody will dominate me and tell me what to do and not put up with my nonsense. And they can't help it and they fall for it. And it's just biological.
Well, if they're on our territory, this is the psychological thinking behind it. I think, well, these men, quote unquote men, are on our territory, and our men haven't fought them off, so they're fine to breed with. And if you take over a territory, breeding rights come with the territory, and that's the same for every animal in existence. You know, if it can secure a territory, then the breeding rights come with that territory. So if you've got Muslims coming over here and our women see these brown people and they're not being beaten up by our men, they're not being sent back, they're walking around unmolested, then they think, well, the tall, dark stranger bit comes in, which used to tall, be, you know, stranger. If you saw something
I wonder if the
different,
Jews created that term.
Well, if you saw somebody that looked different from another village, you would think, well, I'll breed with them, and that would be perfectly fine because it would be within the race and it would add variety to the gene pool. But if you see somebody from a completely different race, they get the same thing, we're looking for variety, but it's a different species altogether, so it's just going to completely destroy your genetic inheritance, which is why they shouldn't be here, why they have to be kept apart from us, why it's so damaging for that to happen when you get into breeding. But just looking at the figures, only 30% of women voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, how much of a slap in the face is that for gender politics? Only 30%.
Yeah. Well, maybe they just, I don't think they like her, basically. And I think I think the whole rape thing with Bill Clinton went a long way as well. And she's not a likable person. She's not a nice person. But, as far as the women issue goes, I mean, the fundamental thing is that, basically men are attracted to youth because youth is fertility, right? You're a man, you're looking at a woman, you want to have babies. So you want a young woman between the age of 16 and 25. And that's when she's beautiful. And that is what you are drawn to. You can't help it. And women, on the other hand, they're attracted to power. They want someone who's going to protect them and help them raise their children. But power can be expressed as wealth. It can be expressed as intellect, or it can just be expressed as psychological, dominating features. So women can't help but be attracted to bad boys and to, aggressive men and to Muslims in that way. And it seems very unnatural and it seems like a horrible thing to say, but if we flip it around the other way and we look at men, and if it wasn't like 100,000 Muslims entering the country every day, and instead it was 100,000 16-year-old Thai girls, the whole thing, I don't even know if I'd be in the alt-right. I don't know if I'd be joining white nationalism. Can you imagine that? 100,000 16-year-old Thai girls entering England every day. I mean, it would just be like...
I don't find those Asian women attractive. But just to go back to what you were saying.
But you see my point, though.
Yeah, I can see your point.
Men are attracted to youth.
Men are attracted to youth.
So men are attracted to... Ordinarily, a white person will be attracted to another white person. But given the extreme, if you're a white man and you see a very young,
white men surrounded
girl,
by these.
And she's like 16 years old and she's attractive, you can't help but being attracted to her. And if you're a white woman and you may see a non-white man, but he has those powerful masculine characteristics, it overrides the racial instinct. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, so, white men that are surrounded by these Asian women, they do end up going with them. I've spoken to some of them online. It shocks me. I think they're hideous. They look like aliens to me. I cannot see what is attractive in Asian women. But the reason why the women go for power, I mean, it's quite logical, because they've only got 2/3 of the body strength of a man. So they're constantly at a position of weakness. You know, their evolutionary instinct, psychological evolutionary instinct, is to get the men to protect them. So they've evolved ways to manipulate men. They look for, as you say, power in men, in whichever way that it's expressed. And that to them, subconsciously, that becomes attractive. That's why they go for the bad boys. And it all goes down to the biological differences between men and women. Now, Simon Shepherd writes about this. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff, but I highly recommend it. And to our listeners, read a book called Sex and Power by Simon Shepherd. It's available on Kindle. There were two actual printings of it, but instead of there being a third printing, it's just available in ebooks. And please, every man should read it. It's you know, the most important book you'll ever read on male-female relations. I don't know, have you read that? Have you read that one at all?
No, I've not read that, but I was into a lot of, I read a lot of stuff in like the seduction community and that kind of red pill kind of stuff. So,
well, it's not so much seduction. It's not about any of that. It's all about the evolutionary drives that are behind it. The signaling that they use, and the markers where they mark men, and handles, and it takes you through all the different stages of manipulation that they have in an incredibly scientific way. He's actually got a scientific term for it, and it's all looked at from a psychological viewpoint, from experiments that he did 30 years ago that he wrote up when he was in Amsterdam. It's absolutely fantastic stuff, mind-blowing stuff. I mean, I don't really look at the manosphere pickup sort of stuff, that sort of thing. I'm more into celibacy rather than seeing how many women that I can sleep with. It just seems to me.
No, I mean, yeah, but just to make it clear, I don't support the seduction community, and I realize the vast hypocrisy of the manosphere. So let me just make that completely clear. All I'm saying is that there is a path that can lead in a way to nationalism, in a way, because it's like this: you're a frustrated young white man, right? You're fed up because your whole planet's been feminized, right? Women don't like you, and you want to get laid, right? You're just an ordinary guy, so you go on the internet, right? And you start clicking around. How do I get laid? You discover the seduction community. And then once you discover the seduction community, you learn the secret that men and women are different. This is what they never teach you in school. They tell you we're all the same. They tell you to treat women like men, and it's all a lie. And you learn that secret. You're not learning it for a political cause. You're just learning it because you want to be successful with women. But once you've learned that, and you start looking at the mass media, and you start looking at feminism, and you see through all that nonsense. You see through it, and then you go on to the manosphere stage. And then you start thinking about men's rights. You start criticizing socialism. You start criticizing, the mass media. You get on the Trump train. And if you keep pushing in that direction, then, you know, you get to the Jewish problem. So it's just the reason why I like the red pill and the seduction community and the manosphere is just because there's a logical progression to see that moves towards white nationalism.
Yeah, I think Andre's writing about it at the Daily Stormer. It loses that sleazy aspect to it, as you say. It's not about the pickup bit. It's about the psychology, the way that women think differently to us, and why they're the way they are, why they shouldn't be able to vote. I mean, to be honest, it's because we gave them the power to vote that it's led to all this. But anyway, we're nearing the end of the podcast now, I don't wonder if you have got any few words that you want to give here at the end before we finish.
A few words to give. I'm just really happy that Trump won, and we're just going to have to find out what's going to happen in February. I mean, who knows what he's going to do? As far as I can say, my favorite idea would be that he sends in the Navy right? Because he's in NATO. Send in the Navy. Stop the immigrants coming in through into Italy. Stop them coming through the Greek islands. Stop them coming. I think they started coming up through Spain now as well. Just plug those gaps, and then join up with Putin. Smash ISIS, and then it's just gun to the head of Angela Merkel and all the European leaders. And now it's like, well, there's peace. Send them back. What are you going to do? And it's just going to be beautiful to watch. I'm just...
What a fantastic idea. I think you've got a good idea there. Instead of pulling out of NATO, use NATO to go after these warships that Africa keeps sending over towards Italy.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea, Subal. That's one that hasn't been thought of yet. So I think we'll finish on that note. And here's to the new glorious masculine future under Donald Trump. Thank you for coming on, Subal. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. And hopefully we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with more SS Britannia for you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. For an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.